Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 9th of March. It's very nice to have you with us. And it's a, it's going to be a good day, isn't it?
How could it not be?
Yippee.
Yippee. That's right. We're going to have a good day. Whether you like it or not, we're going to have a good day. We are very happy to have a terrific panel. Let me introduce them to you. Just a quick reminder that you can join us and be a part of our conversation by simply writing to us. And it's panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Aaron Pasidi is here. He is a professor of economics at Siena College in Loudonville, New York. Good morning, sir. Very nice to have you with us.
Good morning, Joe.
And what a better time to have a professor of economics than today when we're talking about tariffs and everything.
You know, the weird thing about economists is that the worse the economy gets, the more people want to hear from us. But when the economy is doing good, nobody wants to listen to us.
That's a good point. I think you're absolutely right. Well, welcome to the table?
I hate to say this, we are not sitting at a round table.
No.
We're sitting at a heptagon table.
Seven sides? Is that
seven
it?
Sides.
All right, heptagon table. It doesn't have quite the ring to it, does it?
No, stick with round table for marketing purposes.
All right. Judith Enck is with us. She's a former EPA administrator, Region 2, in the Obama administration. Now she does many things. One of those is be a regular panelist on this program. Welcome. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Joe.
Very nice
Good
to have
morning.
You with us. So I read somewhere, so you were supposed to speak on Wednesday night at Bennington College and then it got canceled for the snow. Are they going to do that again?
Yeah, I'm speaking tonight, in fact.
Ooh.
Friday night at Bennington College at 7 o'clock. My speech is entitled The Trump Assault on the Environment and What You Can Do About It.
Oh, you know what's great about that is you have two more days of content to add to your speech.
Yeah, that's the problem. I have to update it almost hourly. But I'm really looking forward to being with the students at Bennington College and also friends from Hoosick Falls will pop over. It's free, open to the public. It's in the Kappa building, which is the marble building just off the main entrance. 7 o'clock tonight. Come on by.
It's a nice, signed campus. You'll be fine. Head on over. Thank you very much. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. You got out of Great Barrington. Good morning.
Yeah. No, I'm out. It was quite nice over there this morning, I want to talk about a talk I'm giving. The president of Hunter College called me up.
Your alma mater, right?
Yeah, and it's something like my 55th anniversary, something like that. Anyway, so they asked me to do a panel, and I said, "Who else is on the panel?" They said, "You." That's what I'm going to be doing. You see, it's a Saturday in New York.
You know when it is?
What do you mean when it is?
When's the panel?
April 15th.
Oh, April 15th.
Yeah, I believe that's right. I don't think anybody will be there. But
no, I think our audience would be interested. And by the way, we have all kinds of other panel members if you want to take the gang with you.
That's a great idea, Joe. Hey, gang.
Yeah. I think a panel of one is
the Heptagon Posse.
Yeah, a panel of one is good.
No, but that's very exciting, and that's a very prestigious institution you're being invited to talk to at Bennington.
Yeah, I love Bennington College.
It is terrific.
Professor David Bond has been working closely with various communities on drinking water problems, and he's great.
His word.
His word?
Is his bond?
Yes, his word is his bond.
Yeah,
that does apply to David Bond. He's amazing.
Now, when I press this magic button, our good friend Malcolm Nance is going to join us. He is in the city of brotherly love, my hometown of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and he is joining us this morning. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I was going to say that I was at Alan's house in Great Barrington, but you ruined it for me.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
I'm calling in a rare call. I was only out of town for one day, and this was that day.
Yeah.
I'll be back tomorrow.
Well, and then hopefully we'll catch up with you next week here in the studio. But it's great to have you with us as always. We always want Malcolm on the program, but we certainly wanted him today with what was going on in North Korea. And that's where we will begin this morning. Just a quick reminder that you can join in on the conversation. All you have to do is write to us. It's panel@wamc.org. So I saw this kind of trickle in very quickly last night, which was that North Korea asks for direct nuclear talks. That was the first thing. And then almost immediately the president said, well, okay, we're all set. So as far as we know, as of right now, North Korea's leader has invited President Trump to meet for negotiations over its nuclear program, an audacious diplomatic overture, according to the New York Times, that would bring together two strong-willed, idiosyncratic leaders who have traded threats of war. The White House said that Mr. Trump has accepted the invitation and that a South Korean official who conveyed it told reporters that the president would meet with Mr. Kim within 2 months. It seems that May is the time that this is going to take place. Malcolm, I'll begin with you. So what do you make of this meeting?
Well, you know, I think that North Korea is finally getting what they have been asking for 65 years. They have been asking for the United States to recognize their leadership as an equal partner to the United States and South Korea on a world stage. And now they can back that up through the threat of nuclear force. The beautiful part about this is that North Korea, they are the masters of trolling. They know how to read their opponents. They know how to manipulate their opponents into doing what they want to do and then withdrawing and getting everything that they want. We've tried this before. They've made approaches to the United States in 1994 and 2005, where both administrations, that's the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, you know, lifted sanctions on certain aspects of their society in exchange for concrete steps. North Korea took those concrete steps, went around us, and then has now, as we've seen today, have viable nuclear missile force that by the time that the Trump and Kim meeting is done, I'm sure North Korea will be looking to operationalize wings of these weapon systems. But it now shows that North Korea is equal to the U.S. They can meet as superpowers, if you want to call them that, or at least nuclear powers. And Donald Trump went right to the negotiating table and gave up everything, his only leverage whatsoever. The other part of that is the Trump administration has been trying this policy called maximal force, which is where they've been threatening war, essentially, and pressuring them with what they think were positive military moves that brought North Korea to the table. North Korea has been dealing with policies like that for over half a century. You just can't beat them at this game because all they have to do is threaten to invade South Korea. And so they've essentially maneuvered us into a place where Donald Trump, you know, and what I can only call Operation Desert Stormy 2, has managed to flip the news cycle away from his porn star problems and now is, you know, acting as if he is the new global elder statesman who is using disruption of the news media to bring about something no other president has done, which is essentially abdicate his position in North Korea.
Alan.
Well, I would never be able to keep up with Malcolm on this, that's for sure. But it seems to me that every time, and I agree with you, Malcolm, every time we have gone into negotiations with these guys, one way or another, the six-party talks, the rest of it, it all looks good until they do one of two things. They eliminate themselves, they walk away, or they decide they're going to lie. They say they're going to do it, and then they just don't do it. Very dangerous.
But part of that is because, you know, when you're negotiating, you have to understand what the other party's talking about from their perspective and from their side, and I think a lot of hardliners in the U.S. fail to even acknowledge that. And I don't think Trump is somebody empathetic enough to see how the world looks from Pyongyang. And I don't know if this is going to lead to any substantive outcomes. I think the further risk here is that, you know, if you're negotiating, I don't think, despite what Kim Jong-un has said, that North Korea is going to fully denuclearize. And if there's some concession about we'll lift the sanctions and you can keep part of your nuclear program, all that does is legitimize North Korea and gives credence to their status as a nuclear state. And I think that's very risky, especially since the State Department is woefully understaffed in East Asia, especially in South Korea and in dealing with North Korea.
It's certainly risky, but I think we all need to root for this to work. Mm-hmm. I mean, exactly. I agree with the way Malcolm and Alan just and I agree with everything that's been said. However, I want this to work. I want us to be working toward peace. I want President Trump to stop calling Kim Jong-un Rocket Man. You know, remember Fire and Fury, now the name of the Michael Wolff book. I mean, this is a very dangerous part of the world, and we have a very dangerous president in the United States. So if there is a moment for diplomacy, it's now. I don't think Trump is a particularly good negotiator for all of his bluster. I mean, look, he can't even negotiate with his own Republican-controlled Congress. So, you know, my fear is that the president is not going to bring in the diplomatic experts from the State Department. There is no ambassador today to North Korea or South Korea. That all said, we need this to work. We need, you know, tempers to not flare. We need this to be productive. And, you know, I think the South Koreans have played this brilliantly. I mean, they came to Washington. They flattered President Trump in their public statements. They have a lot at stake here. They read everything you have to read about Trump. You flatter him, it gets you everywhere. But let's give this a try. I mean, my sense is that, you know, the White House said they'll sit down sometime in May. I bet you when the South Koreans came into the Oval Office, Trump probably said, let's meet Monday. Let's do it right away. I'm ready. And at least we have a month or so to prepare for this.
By the way, it wasn't in the Oval Office. The West Wing guys were meeting, and Trump decided to go into the meeting. He wasn't supposed to be there. Yeah. Malcolm, I wanted to ask you about the Chinese and ask you about what role we think they play in all of this.
Well, you know, Trump has made it clear early on that the Chinese were sort of the spoilers in this entire equation, that they were continuing to trade with North Korea, that they were, you know, North Korea's biggest trading partner, and that he was going to pressure them through threats against North Korea for China to come along. China is playing the adult in the room in this game. They are using real diplomacy, not fake diplomacy at the end of a stick from the Pentagon. They are using real diplomacy, and they understand that stability on the Korean Peninsula is job number one. And what that does, even though it looks like they are giving a concession to Donald Trump, they limited some of the oil imports into North Korea. They made it clear, though, that they would not tolerate a U.S. attack on the peninsula. And so by stepping up to this and allowing Donald Trump to make it look like the optics were in his favor, that he got the North Koreans to come to the Olympics and side with South Korea. But in fact, you have to understand that they have framed, North Korea has framed all of this. And they know the Chinese, they know their region, and the Chinese know them as well. And any little step Donald Trump will take as a huge monumental change. And this will play very well. And the two parties that it will reward the most are China, because they see themselves and they will be seen as the global adults in the room, and North Korea, which now can argue that Chinese sanctions and limitations on the import of oil and foods from China, and even Russia, which has been selling that oil to them illegally. Now, there's no reason for that. We're going to meet with Donald Trump. So they get that. They get a continuation of their nuclear program and the ability to further take time to miniaturize weapons. And they don't have to detonate any weapons. They'll do it as soon as it appears, like you said earlier, Alan, as soon as he walks away from the table and they get, you know, make it clear that they are in parity with the United States. Then they will go back to detonating nuclear weapons and launching ballistic missiles. And we'll look like fools.
I love Alan's question about China, but let me ask you how you feel about our other allies, of how they're looking at this, and the concern, or how are they viewing this, do you think, this morning?
Well, South Korea made it clear very early on when Donald Trump was rattling his sabers that there would be no war on the Korean Peninsula, which means that they pulled out all stops to try to get some rapprochement between certainly the North and the South, which led to their having their joint Olympic organization for, you know, Olympic team for the Winter Olympics, which was a good step. But again, it plays to North Korea's interest. South Korea gets, you know, what South Korea gets is, you know, the ability to prevent thousands and thousands of rounds of artillery from bombarding their country. And it also gets North Korea to the point where they'll come back and do mutual family relationships. You know, there are North and South Korean families that are separated, and they meet in cities that have been set up for this in North Korea, maybe bring back some of the joint manufacturing there, anything to lessen the tensions between the two countries.
Okay, Malcolm, but what about the joint exercises that are scheduled to go forward?
Well, North Korea, I mean, we've been carrying out these exercises for decades and decades, and they play this game. They understand that. You know, when we hold an exercise, their job is to come out and say that we're running dog imperialists and to, you know, threaten to use force against them. But by allowing this to happen, allowing Trump to see as if he is going to be, you know, the Nixon, having his Nixon come to China or Donald come to Pyongyang moment, it allows North Korea to operate with complete impunity in the strategic sphere that they need to operate in. And that's the development of advanced miniaturized ICBMs, which will give them an operational nuclear force to where the United States will never be able to say anything to North Korea ever again, because they will be a fully fledged, certifiable member of the World Nuclear Weapons Club.
Well, I think the other thing to consider is Kim Jong-un wants to stay in power for decades. He is a dictator. His people are really suffering. That economy is beyond collapsing. The sanctions from various countries are having an impact. So I think this was a smart move on his part if he wants some stability there. My question is, let's say there is this meeting in May or June. I'll be curious where it is. I think President Trump will want all the drama, the big announcement, you know, the reality TV show element to all of this. And let's say there's an agreement. And
I looked at the clock and I have to stop you there. We'll be right back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Aaron Pasitti is here. We have Malcolm Nance on the telephone joining us. We have Alan Chartok, who is here. And because I was so interested in what she was saying, I didn't even pay attention to the clock, so I had to stop. I had to stop Judith in mid-sentence.
Oh boy.
Do you remember where you were, and would you like to continue?
I do.
Excellent.
So, look, I with all of the caveats, which are incredibly valid, I think this is a positive move toward peace. The question is, they have the grand meeting, wherever and whenever that is. They reach an agreement, and then Kim Jong-un does what he always does. He backs out of it. And now we're worried about President Trump's reaction. So I think it's so important that the diplomats be part of this. You know, Jared Kushner went to Mexico a few days ago, didn't bring the Mexican ambassador with him to the meetings.
Amazing.
And here, you know, I noticed yesterday morning Rex Tillerson was asked about relations with North Korea, and Tillerson said, oh, we're nowhere close to talking. You know, that is just distance away. So the real challenge for the president is, will he listen to diplomats and try to get an agreement that sticks? Because if he gets an agreement and it doesn't stick, then we're much worse off as not just a nation, but the world.
And he, you know, the likelihood that this could go up in flames because of tempers flying or narcissism is a fairly substantial risk.
Yeah.
And you're seeing that with the tariffs that are being imposed. You say something out of the blue that nobody expects, and all of a sudden you've got people resigning and other countries up in arms and, you know, threatening. So this could turn out to be a lot worse. It could turn out to be worse as opposed to being better for U.S.-North Korean relations.
Well, and Malcolm, you have two, how do I say this kindly, you know, kind of nutty, unstable people meeting, and I don't, you know, what should our expectations be?
Well, I think the expectations are going to be very clear. These two leaders are literally doing this so that they can have a photograph of each other shaking hands. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. I mean, you know, maybe Donald Trump wants an opera. you know, he wants his own version of Nixon Goes to China played out at the Met someday. But apart from that, he wants to appear to be doing a grand gesture. Kim Jong-un needs that photograph. It will literally make Kim Jong-un the senior player at the table on the Korean Peninsula, not any future South Korean leader whatsoever, no matter what our relationship. He can then dictate either through, you know, soft power or, you know, what he does is every once in a while he uses his intelligence agencies to kill somebody or sink a South Korean ship or land commandos in South Korea. But he will always have the U.S. president as at the, you know, the level that he's playing at. And that, of course, compromises everybody else around him. So doing this without any diplomatic leverage whatsoever, without getting any concession, without even having a U.S. ambassador to South Korea, gives Kim Jong-un equal status to Donald Trump, but with better hair.
Absolutely.
All right. Alan, we got a letter.
I'd like to read this letter, this in particular. This morning's discussion shows how disingenuous this panel is when dealing with the president. When he was saber-rattling, you all complained he was driving us to war. Now he agrees to talk, and you say he gave everything away, is doing the wrong thing. This just goes to show you do not really care about the actions or outcomes, but only by your own ideological views. This is sad. As I listen, to make sure I hear all sides of an argument to develop an informed opinion, but this drops my confidence in the output of WMC. May I just say, David Rodas, first of all, we read your letter because we like to show the other side. And secondly, Judith made it quite clear that she hoped this was going to succeed. I think you may be a little unfair here.
Well, I think we're all rooting for this to work. No one wants a nuclear war. But, right. You know, I understand that we were all putting it in context. And it was, I think, perhaps more negative than positive. So I think the letter writer has a bit of a point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just a given that we all want this to work. It's in everyone's interest.
But the structural mechanisms for making that work, like having, ambassadors and diplomats in the right places that are experienced foreign policy negotiators. Trump thinks this is a business deal, and dealing with a nuclear state is different than dealing with, some financiers to get a Trump hotel in Azerbaijan or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if I can just add, you know, the letter sort of shows the partisanship of the writer. He wants, you know, to see a positive spin on Trump's actions. But you also have to understand the world doesn't work that way. We have to deal in the land of real politics, right? The behaviors and actions that occur at a presidential and leadership level, which have effect on real people's lives. North Korea kills people, okay?
Yeah.
And you cannot go far to the left or far to the right with them. You've got to go down the middle and try to coax them along because they know how to play this game. And if we want to give, I will give Trump props for getting North Korea to agree to this. But North Korea has offered this to every other president.
Right, for 60 years.
They were just smart enough, not to take the bait.
We have more letters.
We do, Joe. Good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. If Trump truly wants to build our ships, tanks, and aircrafts from, quote, American-produced metals, last I checked, Canada and Mexico are part of America, by the way, he should just demand that all products and any infrastructure projects paid for with U.S. tax dollars must be U.S. sourced. That should create a substantial subsidy that would sidestep a trade war, yet support those industries. After all, we have a long history of farm subsidies. Why not move into heavy industry? Also, where are the raw materials sourced for the metallurgical production of the finished product? A quick search outline online of USGS, United States Geological Survey, documents will give you the answer. I did not provide a link as per your request, and that's from Andy.
Yeah, I think I made that point last week that if you're trying to help working Americans and boost wages for the bottom 80% of the population, selective tariffs placed on steel is not the answer. You need full employment policies. You need a safety net with retraining for displaced workers so that they can reallocate into growing industries. And there's plenty of ways to do that domestically without ruffling the feathers of really important trading partners who are going to retaliate when this happens.
But Aaron, aren't there existing policies for federally funded infrastructure projects they're supposed to use American steel?
Yeah.
And I know President Trump trumpeted that. That was pre-existing. That's been around for a couple of years. And I want to say I love USGS.
That was so cool of you to say President Trump trumpeted it.
I didn't mean to.
Just he trumped and trumpeted it. Yes.
If I could just make a quick point.
Please.
The U.S. Department of Defense does already and has for decades had a regulation in effect that all U.S. military-made products must be constructed in the United States. It's very compliant. So, you know, we already make all of our tanks and everything with U.S. Technology and U.S. materials, except for those exceptions that come from our allies where they get a waiver. So we're already doing that. If we can do that for infrastructure, it'd be awesome, but it will be more expensive.
I think we already do that for federally funded infrastructure projects.
And we'll talk more about the tariffs in a little bit. Go ahead.
George has written questions on North Korea talks. Good morning, panel.
Good morning, George.
I'd like you to discuss this question. I'm hearing many people are saying that this venture by Trump is worth trying if we can make the situation better. My question to you is this. Do you think this meeting between Trump and Kim can actually make things worse? Judith, you're nodding your head vigorously.
I think doing the meeting is a positive thing. What matters are the details and the outcome. And then if there's an agreement, and if Kim Jong-un does not comply with the agreement, there's a real risk that Trump will get very agitated about that situation. And remember, the whole history with North Korea is they make deals and then they back out of it. So that should be what we expect here. I hope that's not what happens, but that has been our history.
And Trump has shown himself to be very uninterested in policy details. So the chief negotiator for the U.S. probably doesn't have a plan A or a plan B or a plan C in place, and he's probably very uninterested in figuring out what those details are. He thinks he can just go in and glad hand them and compliment him on his haircut and suit, and that will be enough to, make things better. And that's a really naive and dangerous approach.
But we want it to work.
But I want it to work as well.
Well, I'd like it to work, but I actually happen to watch this type of intelligence on the ground all around the world. And where we see diplomats negotiating with great fervor and then watching actual weapon systems being developed, nuclear tests being prepared so that they could go right at it. I mean, North Korea is also, they're masters of the sleight of hand. They could literally start decommissioning their plutonium building power plant and taking down nuclear testbed facilities that are visible to U.S. intelligence through space. And then quietly miniaturize an ICBM and create a fleet of them that can threaten the entire United States. So, yes, it could get worse.
Marty says North Korea.
You're a downer, Malcolm.
Hey, Malcolm, would you have said that if Obama was doing the same thing?
Absolutely.
Just to
you
the.
You've got to be careful with these guys. But Obama reads his intelligence, and he actually listens. So there's
and has staff that know the details and can assist when necessary.
There's no. Go ahead.
Marty writes to us about North Korea. I think North Korea's overture is the result of their recognition that we have weak leadership. They are taking advantage of the chaos that Trump has brought and rightfully think they can get a better deal from him, and that's from Marty.
Yeah, I think Trump's being played.
Yep.
Okay, and then we heard from Amy. Good morning, panel.
Good morning, Amy.
Hi,
good morning, Amy.
My concern with the North Korean overture is the role Russia may play. Russia has been working with North Korea to evade sanctions and may use this as an opportunity to expand their influence there. For whatever reasons, Russia appears able to call Trump's moves. He has refused to implement congressionally passed Russian sanctions. Will Russia use their influence over Trump to force him into concessions that further weaken the U.S. position?
I don't think there's much more we can do to weaken our position now that we've pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We allow Russia to go ahead and break those sanctions against North Korea. Russia is as far as Donald Trump is concerned, one of our great geopolitical allies and not adversaries. So as long as we continue to, you know, or let me rephrase this, as long as Donald Trump continues to see Vladimir Putin as someone who has something over his head, there's nothing we can do that could stop Russia from doing whatever they want, you know, in the, you know, with North Korea. That being said, this agreement or even just the meeting would allow Russia to start opening up trade routes into North Korea. North Korea's got a lot of illicit billions of dollars. But more importantly, if I could go back to that previous question, how worse could this get? North Korea can also now start selling their nuclear weapons and nuclear weapon capability to countries like Iran for like $100 billion. They would probably pay it.
We heard from Lori, talks with North Korea and honors. A quote from Representative Luke Messer of Indiana. If North Korea talks lead to concrete action, President Trump should be well on his way to his own Nobel Peace Prize, unquote. Does he realize that any prize would be shared with Kim Jong-un? It would be a Begin-Sadat moment. By the way, Oslo is investigating two nominations for a Nobel Peace Prize, both forged from the same source. Was the source named David Dennison or John Barron? Also, by the way, when did denuclearize become a word?
Okay. Yes, Malcolm, tell us something.
Quick. I can tell you a little something about those forged documents. Scandinavia, Ministry of Defense, their foreign ministries, both Norway and Sweden, have been flooded over the last year with high-quality Russian intelligence forgeries. And it wouldn't take much for them to just go ahead and forge that document nominating Donald Trump for a Nobel Prize, which we've already seen. But, you know, this is not a Begin-Sadat moment. Begin and Sadat really sat down, two enemies, the head of the Irgun, you know, one of the terrorist organizations of the 1940s and 50s, and, you know, the leader of Egypt. And they really wanted to make this work, and they made it work. This is an overture, which is going to end up with two photographs, and that's it.
But if these two countries are not on war footing, even for a short period of time, that is a good thing.
Sure. If he can get those nukes out, which never will happen in a million years, if he does that, hell, I'll nominate him for a Nobel Prize.
All right. So, Malcolm, can I hold you just for, we have a couple more letters I'd like to get to and have you be a part of. But I have to get a break in. So let's do a break. We'll come back. We'll finish up the letters. And then, Malcolm, I promise we'll let you go. We will be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Aaron Pasitti, and joining us by telephone, Malcolm Nance. We have more letters. Alan, go ahead.
Okay. This one is Korea still has U.S. detainees. Alan, so far we have heard nothing about American or other detainees from North Korea. Will Trump actually talk with North Korea, with Americans detained, with thousands in jails, said to be worse than Hitler's gulag? Deeply frightened, we've got someone who is commander-in-chief who knows nothing, thinks he knows everything, who will not seek expert advice, who presides over a gutted, evacuated State Department, who will blunder on ways inconceivable now, Operation Desert Storm Weather 2, a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing, and that's from Mary in the Berkshires.
A lot in that letter, yes.
Well written.
And John says, North Korea election meddling. Is this a way of North Korea meddling in our next election? Will this give a false sense of Trump preventing a war by being such a good negotiator and deal maker, setting us up for who knows what?
If he prevents a war, that is a good thing.
He gets the credit. Jason says, Trump and North Korea. The reason that North Korea wants to meet now seems to be that they believe Trump is a fool and they can manipulate him. That's from Jason in Esopus.
I'm waiting for Dennis Rodman to appear on the stage.
Yes, it's
so
that would be a powerful duo.
Ambassador in North Korea.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Not joking.
Question for Malcolm. Malcolm, thank you for your valuable insight. We all we hear all of the criticism you are leveling at Donald Trump and previous administrations regarding North Korea. It seems we are making a big mistake right now and that we've been doing things wrong for a long time. But what are your suggestions? What should, in capital letters, the U.S. be doing? And that's from Dan in Pittsfield.
Well, to a certain extent, we do have this fait accompli where North Korea is a nuclear power. And to a certain extent, if you press them with more sanctions, you probably get more concessions. This itself, this whole meeting, is a way for them to lessen their, you know, their sanctions, because by having a head of state to head of state meeting, you can really ask for a lot of things. What we should have done was what we were doing all along, was, you know, I wasn't the greatest fan of strategic patience, but the alternative to strategic patience was theater level war. Okay, you cannot get that regime to cease to exist, and you can't get them to make the concessions that you want. But you could certainly start whittling away, you know, at the regime's fundamental base of power by having mutual exchanges, facilitating the South Korea situation. But, you know, right now we essentially have just given North Korea the ability to start dictating terms, and that's my biggest problem. And I've had that problem back since, you know, for decades. So it's not just Donald Trump, but Trump's just giving away the farm right now.
And Michael writes, give me a break. Good morning, panel, from regular listener Michael. Malcolm, hey. The fact that you list all of the accomplishments of this administration and then try and list why they are not working when they, in fact, our shows much how much you are blinded by your politics. For instance, one, tough sanctions against North Korea brought about this softening of stance in two ways. First, no more tests. Second, the upcoming talks. WAMC, while you claim to be a left-leaning, union-supporting, ethical show, in actuality, when a policy is instituted guarding these union steel jobs, you cry, this ain't right. Trump went against his own party to get these tariffs in place to protect the American economy and middle-class jobs. I can't wait to see the egg on your face. It's going to be so much fun. And that's from Mike.
Well, let me handle the first part.
Please.
I'll take the second.
First off, I let me just clarify to everybody who's out there listening to this. My career has been an intelligence warfighter. My job is the hard reality of bringing facts to the national leadership of the United States and fighting the wars, which I have fought every one since 1981. So I'm not a hardcore partisan. I am a hardcore person who believes in facts. And Donald Trump doesn't deal in facts, and neither do some of your listeners. We have to be realistic. His threat of sanctions did not bring this about. North Korea having successful ballistic missile tests and nuclear explosions has brought this about. North Korea can now sit like a fat cat and dictate to us because they have viable working nukes that can strike the United States. If I were the dictator over there, I'd do the same thing. And now I can reap the reward and pretend that I'm, you know, conceding to Donald Trump and get my photograph and then create more nukes. So that's the game.
And on the tariff issue that...
Yes.
So first of all, Canada and Mexico, which account for 25% of all U.S. steel imports, have been exempted. But, you know, the threat is obviously for countries where the tariff is imposed that they just respond with tariffs on not necessarily steel, but, you know,
bourbon.
U.S. cars or bourbon or Harley Davidson's where,
juice.
You know, states where Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan both have vested interest. This is going to result in a huge loss of market access to U.S. companies in the European Union, which could have more devastating effects on jobs than imposing the tariffs will have. So I don't think they're going to work, and that's not the appropriate way to support a vibrant economy. You need full employment policies, you need a safety net, you need retraining for workers in different industries, and these tariffs are just side-skirting all of them because they're easy to impose, they can be quick, and he can point to it. I mean, it's like the picture opportunity with Kim Jong-un and say, hey, look, I did this, and the ramifications will be long and largely invisible to most of the public.
Yeah. And thank you, Michael, for continuing. And thank you for continuing to listen. Go ahead.
Yeah, speaking on the tariffs issue, you know, another place where China is going to eat our lunch. We are trying protectionist measures on technologies that are 50 and 100, you know, hundreds of years old, coal and steel. And China is going into advanced metallurgy. They're going into an AI, artificial intelligence, and robotics and other fields that we are having our lunches eaten because we are living in the 19th century just so that he could get a few thousand votes. But we've already surrendered solar power to China, so and wind power. I just don't understand why everyone who thinks that Trump is doing well wants to go backwards. I mean, you know, horse and buggy whip sales, I'm sure we should work on those too. Maybe we should impose sanctions on those.
But let's not forget that sanctions, I think it was the Bush administration that imposed sanctions on Chinese steel after the anti-dumping crusade, and that didn't have any substantive effect on the you know, prospects for U.S. steelworkers.
It was supposed to be for 30 months, and they abandoned it in like half the time. Well, what'll be interesting is you hear Paul Ryan and others in Congress criticizing the steel tariffs. Congress can act. They can adopt a law blocking the president's action, but will they?
All right, we're going to take a break and let Ray do some news. Malcolm, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it, and we will. I'll be in touch, and we look forward to having you in the studio next week.
Thanks,
All
Malcolm.
Right. See you next week.
All right, I look forward to it. Thank you. We will be right back after this short break. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Our thanks to Malcolm Nance, who gave us some time this morning, and again, he'll be back with us next week. Alan Chartok is here, Judah Thank, Aaron Pacitti, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan is pre-reading them now for your protection, and we will begin.
All right. So you want me to read letters? Is
yes,
that
sir.
The idea? Okay. Thanks,
yeah,
Joe.
What the hell?
All right. Chuck says, and I'm reading his letter because I don't see him every day.
Gotcha. Verse.
Okay, so you have to take into account that Kim is an intelligent individual while Trump is, frankly, a dumbbell. Well, you know, I don't fully subscribe to that.
No.
I'm not a Trump fan by any means, but he did get to be president of the United States somehow, and that's no easy feat. And I don't know how one comes to the conclusion that Kim is intelligent, because you don't really know Kim, and that Trump is a dumbbell. Whether he's evil or not is another whole story, I believe. Dear panel, says Caroline, is it really South Korea that should get any credit for getting North Korea and the U.S. to sit down together? It seems to me that they took... Oh, I'm so sorry. Isn't it really South Korea that should get the credit for North Korea and U.S.? It seems to me that they took the first steps at the Olympics. Keep up the good work, and that's from Carolyn. Robert says, of Burlington, examples, please. Nothing this guy does seems to affect his position. Yet he can't get policy enacted, but he doesn't care about that. He just wants to be the center of attention. I certainly think that's correct.
It's true, and while the president is not getting policy enacted, he's completely destroying really important federal agencies like the State Department when you need a strong
like
State
your
Department,
agency.
And like EPA, which is just being gutted, and health agencies. So I think we make a mistake just following the headlines from the White House and the Trump outbursts. You know, there's a lot of damage happening at the agencies.
Well, when the Democrats get back into power, if the Democrats get back into power, I expect to see Judith Enck as the secretary of the EPA. And I also expect to see Deval Patrick as a possible president of the United States, which I would love to
see.
Seems
like he may be running. Right?
Well, he certainly gave that little hint
yeah,
the other day.
Yeah.
I've asked him 100 times over the years whether he would be interested, and he's always said no.
Yeah.
Because that's what you always say before you know whether you're
right,
being invited
you
to the
say
prom.
Yes. The, you know? The thing about gutting the State Department, you know, we want President Trump to succeed in these discussions with North Korea, and now he does not have the career professionals and the diplomats that can actually make that happen because he's done so much damage at state.
And the same thing is true to a large extent with the Department of Labor, in that for somebody who's talking about, you know, saving middle class families and, you know, promoting economic mobility and opportunity, he's gutting the Department of Labor in terms of their funding as well.
Although there was a good jobs report this morning.
There well that's
which is good.
it was an okay jobs report.
Michael says, dictators. Is there a dictator in the world that Trump doesn't like? Robert says, North Korea. Panel, what I've heard is that North Korea wants a guarantee of its security in return for abandoning its nuclear weapons program. Is such a guarantee ever possible? And if so, what would it look like? You know, too bad Malcolm's gone, but yes, that is a very interesting question.
Well, if we ask North Korea to abandon nuclear weapons, isn't the next logical move they're going to ask the United States?
By the way, Judith, that's always been the issue.
Right.
The issue has always been for the non-nuclear states. How dare you, you know,
right.
You guys have got them. You got more than anybody else. Why shouldn't we have them, too?
I actually think that is a reasonable question, and that's going to be the first thing on the table after the photo op.
Our friend Daisy says, speaking of economy and the Trump effect, reports out today, yes, economy is growing, but wage growth way down. That's your point,
right.
Aaron Bassetti. Weren't the tax cuts supposed to bring us higher wages?
Yes, that will.
Modestly.
If that does happen, it will take some time to filter through. So to say, you know, these month-to-month reports can be somewhat erratic. I think the bigger issue here is, yes, the economy added 313,000 jobs. The unemployment rate still remains exceptionally low at 4.1%. People are being drawn back into the labor force, which is good, being brought in from the sidelines and not looking for work to now actively looking. The biggest issue with the slow wage growth is, one, it constrains purchasing power. But there's a bigger issue, and that is slow wage growth leads to slow productivity. When workers aren't paid fairly, they don't tend to work as hard, which means businesses are less likely to invest in capital goods and machinery, and that can lead to an overall slowing of the economy. And there was an interesting report that came out, I believe it was earlier this week, that was directly related to the Trump tax cuts, and that was non-defense business capital spending was down substantially. And the tax cut, which was mainly a corporate tax cut with investment subsidies mm-hmm. and advanced writing off of investment, you would expect to see a surge in that. Mm. And there was a decline.
Hmm. It's great to have you here. I mean, because you really know how to lay it out. Thanks so much, Aaron. Molly says, avoiding war. Good morning, panel. And thanks again for getting my neurons firing. But let's get this straight. Trump will get credit for avoiding a war that he has in large part fomented. But let me get this. He ramped up Kim with his insults, something that may have been incited by Kim himself in order to bring about this result. And now he'll get kudos for preventing the war. I'd say it's brilliant if I thought it was premeditated. And that's from Molly.
But Molly, if we do avoid war, we don't care how we get there.
Okay, and David says, negotiating with Kim. Trump meeting with Kim is not a breakthrough for the U.S. The U.S. position has always been that talks had to involve South Korea, Japan, and China. It was North Korea that has always wanted to meet only with the U.S. That's mm-hmm. true.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They've never met with a U.S. president.
And then Mike says, North Korea, will the roundtable ever put aside their bias and throw Trump a bone? If Obama was in office and Kim asked to come to the table, you would be showering him with compliments. Thanks for that letter.
All right. Now, is there anything else that we didn't directly address trade and the tariffs and what went on yesterday, although we talked a lot about it? Does anybody have anything additional they would like to say about what happened yesterday and the yes and nos that were said?
Yeah. I mean, I think I mentioned some of the details earlier, but, to the extent that these tariffs are part of a, pro-growth, pro-American worker agenda, this is the wrong way to do it. There are easier ways that are more effective, like implementing full employment policies, creating, a second New Deal where the government provides employment and retraining to workers who are in dying industries. For workers who are or who have been displaced by trade, there's trade adjustment assistance, which I think is like 0.001% of all federal spending. That could be amped up. We could have things like, just a basic income guarantee for these workers. The cost to U.S. Consumers and businesses from these tariffs can be very substantial. If we took whatever that tax ends up being and just raised taxes on U.S. workers, say like a percentage point or two, we could fund guaranteed employment and retraining. We could provide basic incomes, whether these people work or not. So, this is just the wrong-headed approach. I don't disagree with his policy that, but every president says this. So it's, for what that's worth, that, it's time to figure out ways for America to be able to grow in the 21st century. A lot of economists are predicting really slow growth because of rising inequality, the rising cost of education, the rising cost of healthcare. And what's happening now is we're going down a road that's going to continue to slow growth, and tariffs are not the way to do it.
Well, I'm just waiting for the massive backlash of Harley riding bourbon drinkers. That could get real.
That's a very distinct class you've talked about. Both, I never thought of it. We know that there's a tariff on, there's going to be a tariff on the Harleys, and we know there's going to be a tariff on the bourbon, but I never thought of them as the same person.
Well, hopefully they're not drinking the bourbon while they're riding the Harleys, but could be. I don't know. I don't mean to stereotype.
As long as Scotland and England don't respond with a tax on Scotch and gin, I'll be fine with it.
All right. So we have.
Sorry.
I feel your pain.
We have a couple of minutes, and I want to get to two issues. One of the things, maybe I'm telling too many tales out of school here, but ever since the Trump administration, ever since the Trump campaign, a long time ago on this show, we used to talk about things other than Trump, and we used to have time to talk about other things that seemed interesting that maybe didn't get a lot of press, but we're out there. And then for the last 2 years, it's just been, you just get barraged with all this stuff. And obviously,
motivated by fear.
Correct. So we have a couple of minutes today. I'd just like to talk about two things. One, two stories that I thought were interesting. They just reminded me of stories that we would have done in the old days. One is the women and climate issue. Of course, yesterday was International Women's Day. March, of course, is
Women's History Month. The whole month.
And what I thought was interesting is this article that I came across in this from Sierra Club regarding that it's time Congress passed a Women and Climate Act. And what I also found interesting was how many. This has gained momentum, hasn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
What is it?
Well, it is a bill that will not pass in this Congress.
no.
Women and Climate
we'll
Act.
We'll start there, yes.
Proposed by Barbara Lee. It's very modest. It pivots off a UN report that documents the disproportionate effects of climate change on women. Of course, climate change affects everyone, but a disproportionate impact on women. And so this very modest bill simply establishes a federal working group within the Department of State to coordinate policies, calls for the State Department to designate a senior coordinator for women and climate change. Wouldn't that be an interesting job? And I think it's one of these ideas. It's fairly modest, and maybe in a future administration it would be picked up. But the harsh reality in places like Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and Bangladesh is that there is a disproportionate impact on the impacts of climate change. And then I think more importantly, this article recognizes that the people who are at the table, not just the round table, but,
The heptagonal table.
Okay, right. Go ahead.
So the people making policy, people like Scott Pruitt, Rick Perry, Ryan Zinke, Donald Trump, gee, what do they all have in common? There are no women at the table. And very similar situation at energy companies. It's very male-dominated. So this is a plea to have more women's voices in important decision-making, like what does our energy future look like? Are we going to fund transportation? The president is in this food fight with Senator Schumer about not funding the Gateway Tunnel in New York City. That's a climate change issue. So, I appreciated the article. I don't think the bill will go anywhere in this session, but I think it gets people thinking about the reality of climate change.
The other issue that I wanted to bring up, which I thought was interesting, and this was in the LA Times, and it was sort of around because it was a fairly prominent study, which was a scientific analysis, which offers rigorous proof of something that social media acolytes have known for years. Twitter is an excellent platform for spreading actual news. Unfortunately, according to this new study, it's even better at spreading fake news. Now, we have this discussion about fake news all of the time, but what is, instead of bots and Russians and so forth, well, we're doing it, according to this study. Compared to tweets about claims that were verifiably true, tweets about claims that were undeniably false were 70% more likely to be retweeted in the Twitterverse, and false claims about politics spread further than any other category of news included in the analysis. A team of data scientists and social media experts at MIT came to these dispiriting conclusions after examining the spread of thousands of tweets shared by millions of people over the span of 12 years. Mm-hmm. So this has been going on for a long time.
But we haven't had Twitter for 12 years.
They reported their findings this week in the journal Science. Falsehood diffused significantly farther, faster, deeper, and more broadly than the truth in all categories of information. And it took the truth about six times as long as falsehood to reach, in this study, 1,500 people. The research considered news to be any asserted claim made on Twitter. That claim could be expressed in words, a photo, or a link to a full article on the internet.
Well, I always learn something on the roundtable, and what I learned today is the word Twitterverse.
So when any type of news claim spreads on Twitter, it becomes a rumor, according to this.
Well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to say, okay, no more Twitter? Or we have to have, Twitter has to have somebody examining every single tweet that comes up?
No.
I mean, what do you do?
But, well, you hopefully with studies like this let people know that what they read perhaps may not be true.
Well, I think the key to Twitter, and I will admit I am a huge Twitter fan.
Yes, you are.
And you can follow me at ENCKJ. I went viral last week.
And
it was very exciting.
What is your Twitter handle again?
ENCKJ. Thank you. The thing about Twitter is it really matters who you follow. So I follow a lot of reporters. I follow scientists. I follow nonprofits that I respect. And you got to be really careful on who you're following. And if you're following insane lunatics, then of course you're going to get false information. I think the responsibility is on all of us.
But, you know, if I tweeted something that said, you know, Alan Chartok has three arms.
How'd you know?
I think that would probably spread a lot faster than he does a really good job running WAMC. And I'm not just trying to stroke your ego here.
I'm just trying to prove a point
that, like, which one of those is going to spread faster? There's the spectacle and the novelty and the fact that people might be on to some weird inside story that nobody else knows about. Well, and that can propel things out of control.
For example, when Reese Witherspoon, they said she had three legs, and then they had the cover of Vanity Fair that showed that she had three legs. Well, that would just went all over the place. And, I mean, it was Photoshopped, obviously. Do you all know what I'm talking about?
No.
And
we don't want to know.
Oh, no. So there was this is an actual thing that they did. Vanity Fair took a picture of these actresses, mm-hmm. Reese Witherspoon being one of them, and she has her legs crossed, but they Photoshopped the photo so that it appears that she has three legs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but they didn't fix it. Mm-hmm. So it came out and Reese Witherspoon, addressed it. But to your point, but that obviously, just a normal photo isn't going to go as far as something like that.
No, but Aaron's point is extremely well taken, and it didn't start with Twitter. I mean, I think that's what's so important.
Right.
When we just had the internet, or as Ray Graff always calls it, the interweb, there was always somebody, some foolish person who would put a bunch of lies on a piece of paper. You look up these various people and you will see that rises to the top.
I think that the challenge for today is you have to respect First Amendment, but bad information, inaccurate information, moves so fast. For years, people bought the National Enquirer, right?
Right.
And so,
What's the answer?
I don't have an answer.
The one answer is that you could say to Facebook and to everybody else, you have to have every time a piece of information comes across, it has to be examined as to whether
that's
you
never
can't.
Gonna happen.
You can't do
it's
it.
It's impractical.
No.
Yeah.
And
the
costs of sharing this information are so low that it's just like hitting two buttons and boom, it's retweeted, which makes it very easy to do.
And I,
Go ahead.
Can I make a really dorky epistemological point?
Yes.
Just for using that word?
Yeah.
You can say
okay.
That.
We can't even say the word.
No, so,
no, it's a very important word.
Material conditions and technology can really shape a society's ideology. So if you go back to the rise of the printing press and how the spread of information led to the Enlightenment and, you know, the scientific method, then you have the rise of the industrial age with, you know, large-scale factories and machinery. You have a very orderly, rational thought process. I think with the rise of the digital age, it's going to lead to a really perverted form of ideology, and that is one of post-truth, post-fact, believe whatever you want. If you don't like it, you just call it fake news, and then you spread your own information because it's largely costless. Mm-hmm. And I think in mm-hmm. some ways that, you know, technology just moves blindly. I don't think anybody designed Twitter to allow it for the spread of fake news, mm-hmm. but the way it's been adopted and the way it fundamentally changes people's ideologies and the way they think and process information is going to be very, very dangerous.
We are going to give you the last word. Congratulations. Aaron Pasitti, thank you very much for being with us. Judah, thank you. You'll be at Bennington College tonight.
7 o'clock tonight.
Come on over. You can find out more by going to the Bennington College website. Alan will be at Hunter College, but that's on tax day. We'll talk about that as we get closer to it. I hope you all have a lovely weekend. Be safe, and we'll be back right after this.